It's super exciting. I mean, you know, for all of us, we've been talking about it lots ever since we all got picked, and to be here in this city with, you know, see these people have shown so much support to us and the franchise, and you know, I can't really put into words how good it feels to kind of, you know, get started and have this you know, journey begin for all of us. So you know, I'm super pumped to be part of the Blackhawks organization.
Part of the Blackhawks organization.
Canadian. Indeed he is. Yes,
yeah, he is. He's Canadian. He's Connor Bedard. Welcome in, welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito. We're sitting in for Mully and Haw today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're going to go to the Score Hotline. It's presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We welcome to the show Ben Pope of the Sun Times. He covers the Blackhawks. He writes about hockey. His life is all Connor Bedard all the time now, with a little bit of Marcel, which we'll get to that. A player so nice and funny, they named him twice. Welcome to the show, Ben. How are you?
Thanks for having me. That's a very accurate description of life right now.
Yeah, it is. So you're right. The Pope writing about hockey Jesus, and nothing is too small. And the kid's 17. He handles himself, in my, what I've seen, better than a 17-year-old, certainly better than he hold. I couldn't hold my water at 17 if I were in this kind of situation. Give us, what do you think? Give us a rundown of the profile of the person, of just your early thoughts, your early ideas of what he's like and what he may be, how he will handle what he'll face here.
Yeah, I have also been extremely impressed by his personality coming in and being so grounded and humble and not really fazed by all the pressure and spotlight. I mean, just based on his talent alone, the Blackhawks were going to have to select him first overall. There's really no question about that. So they've really gotten quite lucky that it turned out that the guy who was the most talented in this draft class was also the most mature. And it's because there have been other players over the years, other players this year, where super talented, but maybe some questions about the character or the personality, or would just take some time to grow into this kind of role. But that is not the case with Bedard. I mean, he has handled this extremely well on all fronts. And talking to people who've known him for years, this is just the kind of guy he is. It's not like he's been media trained into this or some kind of front he's putting on. He's known for being a really grounded, humble guy who he's just a normal 17-year-old on one hand. Like he talks like a 17-year-old and he is just kind of a normal guy, but he also doesn't seem to get fazed by all the attention and spotlight, and is disciplined, is focused on hockey. The kind of rumor was, or story was from training camp this week, development camp, they're doing it off ice only this year, and he had still brought his skates anyway, was trying to convince the team to let him go on the ice anyway because he's just that dedicated to his training. So yeah, it's all true what you've heard. He's certainly been very impressive off the ice as well as on it so far.
Ben, it is amazing when you talk about it, especially because he is, I mean, 17. It's like just graduating high school, right? Or whatever your personal equivalent is to that. All right, so imagine now you're thrust into being the centerpiece of a franchise rebuild, and everyone in the world is expecting all of this and more from you, right? I mean, it's got to be some pretty heady stuff. But you said, so he's been lauded like this, you know, going forward. I mean, this was one of those, you know, can't miss type prospects. So you're saying he's been preparing for this for several years now?
Yeah, I mean, he completely refused to acknowledge that he would be the number one pick until it happened. So on one front, it's not like he's been thinking of himself in that light, but he has been kind of seen as this future star for years. So it's not like in another sport where we would see somebody coming through college and playing in those kind of huge roles. Like hockey's certainly a little different in that way. But this past season with the Regina Pats, his junior team, he was kind of a minor celebrity. Talking to his coach and GM there, they would be traveling around by bus in Western Canada. They get to hotels at 3 a.m. in various cities, and there'd be groups of people there waiting for his autograph. They get to hotels at 9 a.m. for, I mean, arenas at 9 a.m. for morning skate, and there'd be people there waiting for his autograph. That he was selling out every arena they went to. They went to, had 20 straight road sellouts. And at home, there was buzz, too. We couldn't go to the grocery store without getting recognized. And this is a 16, 17-year-old junior hockey player who's not even really on TV that much. So he has been in the spotlight, at least by hockey standards, quite a bit for a while. And his performance at the World Junior Championships in December, January with Canada kind of made him a sensation as well. He really carried them to that gold medal, and those were on national TV. So he is used to the spotlight already. It's certainly going to increase now that he's in the NHL and playing in a huge market like Chicago, but it's not a totally unfamiliar experience for him.
Ben Pope was our guest. He covers the Blackhawks for the Sun-Times. We're talking Blackhawks and hockey Jesus Connor Bedard. By the way, he broke Gretzky's record for scoring a junior, World Juniors. He got more points than Gretzky. When you've done that, you've done something.
That's something good.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's because most people who speak hockey only speak three words, and it used to be Gretzky, Lemieux, and Hull,
mm-hmm.
and now it's Connor Bedard. And by the way, three words I know. Kyle from Chicago. I would have loved for Kyle from Chicago to have been asked, were you surprised he was still on the board when you selected? That I would have loved.
That was certainly the case with the 19th pick, Oliver Moore, but it would have been interesting to see his reaction for that pick question for the first pick.
So he's gone about this in an interesting way. What he has done is have the most celebrated, you know, the transcendent talent of whatever generation you want to call this. And he surrounded him. He made a deal for Taylor Hall and Nick Foligno, two guys who were respected for their game, for their leadership, for their professionalism. He also signed Corey Perry, who, if you don't speak hockey, that's like bringing Dennis Rodman to the Bulls or A.J. Pierzynski to the Sox.
Thank you. That's perfect.
Yeah, that's what you're doing. And yet, Corey Perry's a guy who's hated by everybody except his teammates. So what do you think of, and what has Kyle from Chicago said about this surrounding this young talent who has captain written all over him, but not this week, surrounding him with veterans who have playoff experience, professional experience, have a lot of NHL experience?
Yeah, it's interesting that they decided to move on from Kane and Taves when their contracts expired this spring, but then brought in all this veteran talent, and I asked him about that. His explanation is that when there's Kane and Taves, everyone just automatically defers to them. There's no question about it. And it kind of overshadowed everyone else, like not really anything of their own doing, but it was just hard to become a leader when we had guys of that level of reverence in the locker room. And the idea with bringing in Hall, Foligno, and Perry is that they are very experienced leaders who will be able to provide a lot of mentorship, but they're not such a big deal in Chicago that they'll be the only leaders. The idea is that he wants Bedard, he wants Lucas Reichel, he wants some of the other young players coming in to grow into leaders themselves and be able to learn from those veterans and work alongside them eventually rather than have those guys just telling them what to do. So that's kind of the logic here, and certainly those three guys are going to be able to provide a lot of experience. Nick Foligno is a former Blue Jackets captain, and talking to him is truly one of the most like well-liked, well-spoken guys around the league. Corey Perry, obviously a little different. Fans have been a bit upset about that, but I think the Dennis Rodman comparison is 100% accurate. He probably will start to be a lot more liked now that he's wearing a red jersey. And then Taylor Hall is still a very good player in addition to a leader. I mean, he could still be a 60-point guy, and he's a former league MVP, and it sounds like he's pretty motivated to prove that he can still be that kind of caliber of player now that he'll be getting more playing time that he hadn't necessarily been getting the past couple of years in Boston. So those seem like three solid additions. They're not going to make the Hawks into a playoff team this coming season, but they should be able to provide Bedard some support and some mentorship.
Ben, if you're Luke Richardson and you've got the you know, the awesome task here of inserting Bedard into this roster and meshing, you know, the veterans in. What's your strategy? How do you go about it? What do you think he's going to do to make this as smooth as possible for the kid?
Well, it doesn't seem like he's really going to need that much. After development camp this week, he'll go back home to Vancouver and just relax and train and hopefully get a little time out of the spotlight. And then once training camp comes around in September, I'm sure they'll try to get him playing with different combinations to see what works best and just get him comfortable with everyone on the current roster. But I expect him to be on the first line on opening night. Whether he'll be playing center is maybe a little less certain. I could see them potentially try to ease him in on wing, if only for the faceoff issue. But he's going to be playing a lot right off the bat, and he's going to be expected to handle that because every indication has been that he will be able to handle that. But really, the one thing that'll help out is that team expectations will be pretty low this year. I mean, they're not expecting to contend for the playoffs. They're not really expecting to be significantly better than last year. So if they're losing most of the time, it won't be a ton of heat on him. Now, if he's not producing, then it could be a little different. I think no matter what the organization tries to do to shelter him, just the attention he's going to get around the city and around the league is going to inevitably create quite a lot of pressure anyway. But really, it's just going to be, you know, giving him the freedom to kind of figure things out himself. And that seems like the kind of situation that Bedard will be able to handle pretty well.
Following up on that, Ben, what can you tell us for as Steve says, for those of us that don't speak hockey as fluently as you do, for future or past guys, you know, McDavid comes to mind that came in with this, you know, can't miss hype. What did they look like as rookies? Were they immediately dominant? Are they guys that are going to come
Mario,
in? And,
Mario scored on his first shot in the NHL. Hello? Yeah.
It depends kind of on the player. With McDavid, we saw him immediately be kind of a star off the bat. Other guys maybe take a little bit longer. He's almost certainly not going to be his peak self right away. Even with McDavid, despite him immediately doing well, he's certainly grown since then. I mean, he wasn't a 100-plus point player right off the bat. But it just depends on the player, and I think certainly I would expect him to be one of the team's leading scorers this coming season. I think it would be disappointing if he wasn't. But he's also not going to be a totally finished product, so I guess it's somewhere in between would be my best explanation of that.
Talking Blackhawks hockey with Ben Pope. He covers the Hawks for the Sun-Times. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito in for Mully and Haw. The word you used earlier was expectations, and it's a very incendiary word, and it gets coaches fired. It gets coaches who are trying to coach transcendent talent fired. Nobody, you go back and look at some of the transcendent talent, the clear number one, the number one you'd tank for kind of guy, and the Penguins did in order to get Mario. They tanked. They got him. The coach is fired after 3 years. Expectations are what they are. When the Flyers acquired Eric Lindros, that guy was traded to two different teams, and there were three others in the bidding, and he wouldn't play in Quebec. Bill Dineen lasted one season. Alex Ovechkin got Glenn Hanlon fired after two seasons. Sidney Crosby came in, and the coach then didn't last until Christmas. By the way, that coach was Eddie Olczyk. He was fired before Christmas, and Mario quit the next day. And then there's McDavid, and Todd McLellan lasted longer, 3 years, which is longer than most coaches do. So Luke Richardson, coaches of guys like Connor Bedard don't get to raise the cup with that guy. Has Luke Richardson talked about that being the expectations are going to be it's Luke Richardson's fault, not Connor Bedard's? How do you think Luke Richardson deals with that?
Yeah, that's a really good question and a really good example of all those previous cases. The thing is, Richardson did extremely well last year, but he did do so with absolutely zero expectations, as you point out. He created a good morale in the locker room. He put in effective systems for the talent that he had, which wasn't much. He sort of organized the team. He brought in good assistants. Like, he really checked every box that he could have this past season. But it was on the tanking team where losing was kind of better for the long term. So there wasn't really that many ways he could have failed, not to take anything away from the work he did. So certainly things are going to change a little bit for him now. Even if the team isn't really going to be expected to be that good this coming season, how he handles Bedard is going to be scrutinized a lot more closely than anything he did last year. Every indication so far is that I think he will be able to do a good job with that. He's already proven to be a really good players coach. He has a great relationship with everyone who's played under him. He's gotten the best out of some players who aren't blessed with the same amount of talent as Bedard, but have still managed to make it into the NHL. But certainly we haven't seen how he coaches a special generational player like this. I mean, not many coaches ever get that kind of opportunity right when they're coming into the NHL. So it's going to be an interesting thing, and that's certainly going to be a big storyline this season, is how Richardson handles Bedard and how their relationship unfolds. It doesn't sound like they've really gotten to know each other too much yet. They've just had one or two initial conversations the past week or so, considering Richardson isn't super involved in the drafting process. But so you're right, that will be an interesting one to follow. And the Blackhawks certainly believe that Richardson is the guy who will not only sort of shepherd them through the rebuild, but will lead them out on the other side. But of course, NHL coaching lives are typically pretty short, so it's going to take a strong performance by him to make that actually be the case. So just playing the numbers, I mean, yeah, you never know. Often it doesn't last that long, but we'll just have to see how things pan out.
Hey, Ben, before we let you go, you mentioned Oliver Moore, and I know this is general manager speak regardless of sport. We couldn't believe he was there. He was so much higher on our board, blah, 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 blah. Well, they said all those things about Oliver Moore when they took him at 19. What can you share with our listeners about Moore? I know he's a center just like Bedard, but in terms of what his future might look like.
Yeah, he's certainly going to be a top prospect for this team as well. But in the case of most prospects who aren't named Bedard, it is going to take him a little while to really get to a point where fans would be noticing him that much. Most mock drafts had him going in like the 10th to 12th range, and Davidson did seem legitimately shocked that he fell to 19th. The Blackhawks have been trying to trade up to get him for an hour or so, and then it just so happened that he fell to their original pick. But he's known as one of the best skaters, maybe the best skater in the draft, which is certainly the thing that the Davidson has been prioritizing most of all the past couple of years with his additions. He's headed to the University of Minnesota next year, where he'll be rooming with Sam Renzel, who's a defenseman the Hawks took in the late first round last year. And he'll probably need at least 1 or 2 years at Minnesota before turning pro. And he's certainly not going to be in nearly as fast a track to Bedard to start him, but he's certainly a guy that the Blackhawks believe could be future top six center for them a few years down the line.
You know, all the guys we talked about earlier, the transcendent talents, Mario and Lindros, Ovechkin, Sidney Crosby, McDavid. Crosby, no wonder he's Bedard's idol, because he's under 6 foot. He's the only one of that group under 6 feet, like Bedard, right? Bedard's the problem with small guys, they're usually fast, but once they get caught, they stay caught. And it can hurt. Oliver Moore is kind of the same way. It's usually the way hockey goes, speed versus muscle. And the idea of him idolizing Crosby is terrific, especially because he wasn't a big guy. Did he talk about that? I mean, this is not, Bedard's not coming in like a giant. He's not 6'4 like Mario was.
He's been asked about the size, but he doesn't seem to personally be too worried about it. And I don't think the Blackhawks are either. While he is on the smaller side height-wise, he is extremely muscular. Just looking at him, at the NHL Combine last month or a couple months ago. He was one of the strongest guys there without question. And just looking at his quads is pretty amazing. So I don't think there's really too much worry about strength or weight. It's just more learning how to play as a smaller player up against bigger guys. And that is going to be part of the learning process for him adjusting to the NHL. That's going to be a little bit different than what he's experienced in junior hockey previously. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be a big issue because he's not light. I mean, Lucas Reichel coming in the past couple of years, one of the big issues has been that he's his lightness, that he's maybe not as strong as the Blackhawks would like him to be, despite all of his skill. I don't think they have that same concern with Bedard. He's pretty strong for his size.
All right, Ben, short shifts, put the puck in deep and hit him. They don't like that. Okay, ready, go. And thanks for your time. Ben?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Ben, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Sorry, I was just giving
Didn't mean to startle you there.
Coach's pep talk, short shifts, put the puck in deep and hit them. They don't like that. That's what they say. That's
I get it.
Right?
I hear you.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate your time.
Thanks.
Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times, talking Blackhawks. And I the pressure, I think the kid will handle the pressure. I think Bedard will welcome it. He'll perform. Look, he's performed. He's got captain written all over him. He's performed at every level. He's performed to the point where you heard Ben describing that you show up at 3 a.m. at a hotel and people want your autograph and all of that.
That's nuts.
The star stuff. And he's not even 18. So, and the way he sounds, the way he's conducted himself, the way he's comported himself, all bodes well for the Blackhawks. And that would be terrific. Now, can you play in the NHL?
We're going to find out.
I know. We're going to play a game with Mike Esposito next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's the Steve Rosenblum and Mike Esposito 4th of July extravaganza on 670 The Score.
Caesar, I appreciate you having Russ Matera do that, but when does the extravaganza? When we're at 9:30, we're closing in on almost being done with this at 11 o'clock. We'll hand it over to Mark Grody. So, Caesar, when do we get the ganza part of this?
I thought we are in the midst of it. Are we not in the midst of the extravaganza?
It's happening right before your eyes,
second hour of playing games with Mike Esposito. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito. We're in for Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Like I said, Grody will be here at 11. We will talk with Mark, and he'll take you up to the Cubs game. Today, the Cubs continue their series against the Brewers. Pregame at 2:35, first pitch 3:10, on The Score and the Infinity Cubs Radio Network. Also, did you know you can hear Cubs games on your smart speaker? Just tell your device to play 670 The Score. Okay, we're going to play a game with Mike Esposito. We're going to play make-believe, Mike. And Espo, let's make-believe that you're a parent of three children.
Okay.
Okay, let's make-believe.
We'll go out into fantasy land for that one. Yep.
We're not going to fantasy land. Let's say you and, I don't know, just to fill in the blanks, your wife is named Stacy. And we're just going to make that. And you have three kids.
Okay.
And so this is, you know, are you with me with this fairy tale scenario?
I'm with you. I feel
it. Just making this up as I go along.
Yep.
And let's say you know, your kids are school age and you live in, I don't know, Arlington Heights.
Okay.
Let's say you live there.
I'm with you so far.
Let's say your kids are in the Arlington Heights school district.
They are.
Or neighboring school districts.
Maybe.
Let's just go along.
They're
okay?
Right there.
Can you work with me on this?
I can. I think I can be flexible enough to fit that into our storyline.
Let's say a professional football franchise worth $5.6 billion. Mm-hmm. We'll call them, just euphemistically, the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
And they come to, say, your town, which we, in this scenario, we made up a village called Arlington Heights.
Okay.
That you and your fake wife and fake three kids live in, and you're trying to educate them. And this football team worth $5.6 billion says it wants to put up this smashing, big, new, gorgeous football stadium and downtown area and just an entertainment district and big and glossy, and we're going to have lots of things. We're going to have wrestling here and Taylor Swift here and football here and do all that, and there's going to be people living here, and there's going to be offices and restaurants, and people will eat our famous Arlington Heights food. I don't know. If we made up a place called Arlington Heights, we can make up good food there, right? So we have all that. And let's say, again, for make-believe purposes, you're the father of three children. And this football team says, we're going to do all this. And they say, okay, we're going to tax you at a rate that says you're going to do all that. And then this football team says, no, we don't want to do that. And the school districts say, wait a minute. Property taxes are where we, how we fund our school districts. Are you trying to make our kids dumber? And the this football team, euphemistically, just we'll make up a name, the Bears. And they say, well, we'll pay our fair share, only except we want cost certainty. We want a cap on it, which means they won't be paying their fair share. And by the way, kids will become dumber because of the football team. So let's say in this scenario, you're the parent of these school-aged children. How would you feel about that?
I am conflicted in our fantasy scenario here.
Yeah?
I mean, listen, I get the Bears trying to make the best deal they can for themselves. I get it. It makes sense. It's what teams do. That's why they hired Kevin Warren. That's what he's doing.
Do you think he's a hypocrite? Do you think he's lying? Why do you think he's saying these stupid things? Did he walk into this clown college, or did he create it?
I am guessing only, that when the Bears bought the land for the $200 million or whatever it was of the old racetrack, he was not there. And I'm guessing he came in and saw what was going on, and especially as they started talking about taxing and dollars and what it was going to cost the Bears, he said, no. This is how we did it in Minnesota, and this is how these are the things I want to do, and as your new president, this is what we are going to do, right? Mm-hmm. So, but listen, I mean, do I think they're going to Waukegan or Naperville or whatever? I mean, no, I don't. I think this is all part of the theater of getting this done. But as a parent, as you said, as a parent of school-aged children in the school system, you certainly want them, because if the Bears don't pay those taxes, guess who pays them?
Yeah, the Espositos.
Yeah, exactly right. We do not need more taxes, I can promise you, in Arlington Heights.
Two things are happening. One is, you would be shouldering, you as a parent, all the parents would be shouldering a greater burden of the property taxes, or the greater burden of education in terms of property taxes. When you look at this corporate welfare that the Bears claim they, or the Bears want and think they should get, and they want a cap on that, and can you go to the Arlington Heights or can you go to the assessor and say, I want a cap on my property taxes too.
I'm eagerly awaiting my next property tax bill, because that's where we get to see what they've done to us in the last last round of assessments. No, listen, I understand why the Bears are doing what they're doing. I understand they want to build all of this stuff on there. I understand all the money it's going to bring into the area. I am actually for all of that. I'm excited to see what eventually gets built there and go check it out, right?
You actually want this in your little burg.
I do.
Quiet little
village. And I am far enough away to where it will not geographically or traffic wise or whatever, right? I mean, I'm a few miles north and east of where the racetrack is and where the stadium will be, right? So I'm curious to see.
You don't even have to venture on 53, which is just going to be a miserable experience.
Nope. If I wanted to walk there, it would take me about 20, 25 minutes.
You're going to rent out your lawn?
My lawn is, I mean, if people want to park that far away, they certainly are welcome.
Well, 25 minute walk is going to be better than what they'll spend in traffic down there.
It's awful. If you got a bike, it's a 10 minute. I mean, In my opinion, it'll be wonderful for the area. I get the downtown business owners, because there is a wonderful downtown Arlington Heights with restaurants and bars, and there's a theater and all the other, you know, downtown stuff, right? They're wary slash against this for obvious reasons. They don't want it infringing on their businesses. In my mind, it's almost like two separate things, right? If you're going to downtown Arlington Heights, you're going to downtown Arlington Heights. This would be a mile and a half to 2 miles away, and it's a different type of thing, right? It's the entertainment district thing as opposed to the downtown thing. And if you're going to do that, if you're out in the northwest suburbs, you're 5 minutes away from the Woodfield area anyway. You can drive down there, right? I mean, it's the same idea, right? What I don't want is for my tax bill, for my funding of our schools, which is part of the reason why we live there, right? Because the schools are great, and we're happy to pay said taxes, but I don't want to pay more taxes because the Bears are paying less taxes, if that makes sense to you.
I hate the Bears for doing this. I've seen SAT scores in this state go down for five straight years, and we're waiting on the sixth. And the threat of making people dumber, and the Bears are hoping people are already stupid enough to give them what they want. And I think teachers are the most underpaid, underappreciated, and most important people in America right now. And the Bears seem to have no problem. Like, oh, we're here. It is the NFL mentality now is this. We won the toss in life, and we've elected to receive. And that's what they do, and all they do. It goes up. The McCaskies have never struck anybody as a smart business family. This is not like what the Rooneys have done in Pittsburgh. This is not even close to that, the way they've managed things. They've become more valuable because they're in Chicago, and they're more valuable because people in the NFL who do know what they're doing have raised the NFL's
true
point, the focus, the value, all of that keeps going up. And the fact that they're barging in, why am I more upset than you?
So here's the thing.
I'm more apoplectic about education than you are.
I know. I've tried to remove myself from the day-to-day of this, thinking that, you know, big picture-wise is what I'm trying to focus. I mean, I get it, right? The Bears don't want to be taken advantage of by Cook County and the taxing, various different taxing boards or whatever. I don't even know what they're called. Where all of this comes from, right? All right, Bears pay this, Bears pay that, whatever. They don't want to say, oh, well, we just bought this land, we're building all this, and you know, take what you want from us, basically. I understand they don't want to do that. I also understand.
Then don't say we're going to pay our fair share, because they sound like people who refuse to pay their fair share. Kevin Warren.
That is my, because a texter points out from the 317, shouldn't that have been one of the first questions they asked, is how much the property taxes are going to be before they bought the land?
Again.
Which, yeah, you would think, yes.
Not this.
You would think. And maybe
not the smartest pencil in the role.
And maybe when Warren came in and he questioned how all of the previous stuff was done, and now he's taking a different track to kind of get this thing to the finish line. But right, there's plenty of money in this for everyone, right? Including the schools, including the Bears. The Bears are going to make more money than they ever have. They don't own anything down here.
But that apparently is their elitist expectation. We've won the toss in life. We expect to receive, and we're not going to pay anything.
And then the question, my question would be, and in some of these cases, and I maybe this is, you know, old timey, old fogey thinking, is in some of these cases, isn't it the public good, right? I mean, the Bears can still make tons of money, and they could all still be super rich while sharing the wealth with the surrounding area, the surrounding schools, you know, the neighborhood that you're going to be in, that your entertainment district is going to be in, that your stadium is going to be in, right? Is that too pie in the sky idealist that doesn't happen anymore?
I'd be all for that. You want to build that? You want to build that dream scenario? You want to? I said a couple of weeks ago when this first came up, three, 4 weeks ago, Kevin Warren, I sided with him on the idea that when nothing's going on, I mean, they're demolishing it because they expect something to go on. They expect something big, but they're not realizing income from it. Okay, I can negotiate a tax break when you're not making the money. But to give you a cap or cost certainty on your property taxes later on, when this is the bonanza you think it is, that's crap. That's you're a hypocrite. Don't tell me you're going to pay your fair share.
I agree. So there's a bunch of texts rolling in, and we should certainly point out that our guest line.
No, our listener line.
Our listener line, sorry, sponsored by Busey Bank, the Busey Bank Score Hotline, building business, growing wealth since 1868. We've got a ton of stuff coming in on this, and I get it, and I actually agree with this. The Bears should not be taken advantage of. In other words, as one texter points out, you know, the taxes on the empty land are now triple what they were when the horse track sat there,
yeah,
right?
Horse track wasn't doing anything.
So I agree. I don't want the Bears to be ripped off in this scenario either. So don't. That is not at all my intent. My point is that in the billions of dollars that are going to be there, if they pay for however it is as they build up, of course, if they're not making money from the land, you tax it whatever the value is as it's being built. And then as it becomes this entertainment complex, then you tax it at that level. But how do you cap that when you don't even know what it's going to be, right? I mean, that's the other side of this coin.
Yeah, I don't want to see that. Don't make people dumber. That's our job right here on the radio.
That's Steve and I trying to describe tax code. This is what we're doing right here.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? No?
Johnny?
Ever seen a grown man naked? It's an anniversary of that movie. And, of course, there's sports involved in that. We would do it. At the top of the hour, we'll talk to my friend Bobby Pastrami. You may know him as Bob Schwartz. He wrote the book. He really wrote the book. Never Put Ketchup on a Hot Dog. It's 4th of July, and we're doing all the grilling and the hot dogs. And we will talk to him. And the man who has formed and is spearheading the Hot Dog Hall of Fame after all these years, there is a Hot Dog Hall of Fame.
I've only had like 4 hot dogs this weekend so far, so we'll have to add to our total tonight.
And we'll see what's appropriate to put on it when we talk with Bob. But in the meantime, we want to celebrate a movie we all love. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We got to keep your taxes low.
Happy 4th of July. Or a good 4th of July. I don't know, after what happened last year, my experience in Highland Park was really hard to... I was not there, but just the experience, what we all did, watching it and grill... Watching the idea, watching what happened and watching it play out and glued to the television in a day where it should be, you know, grilling and outdoors, mm-hmm. and friends, kids running around. So it's really hard to say happy. But I wish a healthy 4th of July, maybe some introspection, maybe some human contact. That'd be good.
Yeah. Get out there. Enjoy your families. Be safe. And, yeah, okay. I agree with what you say. And before we go any further, you mentioned Grody Follows Us, right?
Yeah, we're going to do crossover transition. We're gonna do transition with Mark Grody.
And Grody, an hour from now. Grody will take you into Cubs baseball. Today, the Cubs continue their series against the Brewers. Pregame at 2:35, first pitch 3:10 on The Score and the Xfinity Cubs radio network. And you can hear games, Cub games, on your smart speaker. Just tell the device, play 670 The Score.
Xfinity,
do it all the time.
You say. Xfinity, you
Xfinity.
Say. All right, so I believe it was July 2nd, 1980, but it was certainly a couple days ago in 1980. One of the greatest movies of all time debuted. And Airplane had joke after joke after joke that you were just assaulted by them.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't wait to see the movie because it was produced by the guys who did Kentucky Fried Theater. In L.A., there was a Kentucky Fried Theater.
Mm-hmm.
The Abrahams and Zuckers, you see the directors on it, right?
Yep.
Written by director Abrahams. The Abrahams brothers and Zucker, and Abrahams and Zucker was the name of the writer. Director.
Not to be confused with Abraham Zapruder of the film fame.
And I saw Kentucky Fried Theater once, and it was all kinds of shtick like you saw in the movie, which why I couldn't wait to see the movie. But one of the scenes was in a courtroom, and the attorney puts I can't tell the story on the radio for fear of risking
okay
injury. Anyways,
we don't want that.
And no, we don't. So there was a wonderful sports turn. They broke the fourth wall in a way, but it was a wonderful sports turn in Airplane that we don't want to miss a chance to play. Mm-hmm. And it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar acting as the assistant pilot, right?
Co-pilot,
yes. Co-pilot. And this little boy gets a tour of the cockpit. And there's Roger Murdoch, the character's name, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's character's name. And this scene is just wonderful.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You play basketball for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm sorry, son, but you must have me confused with someone else. My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm the co-pilot.
You are, Kareem. I've seen you play. My dad's got season tickets.
I think you should go back to your seat now, Joey. Right, Clarence?
Oh, he's not bothering anyone. Let him stay here.
All right, but just remember, my name is Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot.
I think you're the greatest, but my dad says you don't work hard enough on defense. And he says that lots of times you don't even run down court. And that you don't really try, except during the playoffs.
The hell I don't. Listen, kid. I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at UCLA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes.
So true. And we have an 815 texter. You're exactly right. Airplane worked because of the straight actors who did comedy. You're exactly right. The material was great. It was outstanding. The jokes were good. And because they were delivered by... like Robert Stack, as serious as he got, Leslie Nielsen, and Lloyd Bridges. I picked a hell of a week to pick the wrong week to give up glue sniffing.
Stryker. Right?
And they played it straight. Robert Stack played it straight, and Leslie Nielsen was a hospital. What is it? Well, it's a big building with patients and doctors and nurses, but that's not
important.
It's not important right now.
Well, and for everyone who knows, you know, if you're of a certain age and you don't remember Bill Walton being a dominant basketball player, well, there's Kareem saying, you tried dragging Walton and Lanier down the court every night.
And it was,
there you go.
And it was true. All the criticisms were true. The fact that he went along with that was just outstanding. And then there was the absurd, the silly jokes. And for those of us of a certain age, quite the seniors, there was Mrs. Cleaver showing up in a movie.
Talking jive, right? Is that her? Yeah.
Excuse me, stewardess. I speak jive. And Barbara Billingsley was it. The fact that they got, she did the sitcom Leave It to Beaver, but most of them were serious actors, and it was just the movie was wonderful. Just kept firing line after line after line at you. And there's Julie Haggerty, and they're talking about the Peace Corps.
Yep.
And they went to Africa, and we went to Africa to help modernize the country. She's showing this woman Tupperware.
Mm-hmm.
Save on your food bills. Stretch your food bills.
Mm-hmm.
630 texter texts in, said the Kareem character was initially supposed to be Pete Rose. I've never heard that before.
I had not heard that one.
Is that true, or are you just lying? Don't lie to us, 630 texter. We'll hunt you down. We have your number.
The other funny part of this, and I'm sure this is true of a lot of people, I have not watched Airplane in, I couldn't even tell you the last time.
You don't have to. We've done the movie.
No, but I remember all the lines. Like, I mean, it's funny.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And everybody cheered in the theater when they punched the Hare Krishnas who bothered you at the airport. In my theater, anyways. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, it might be the greatest hot dog holiday, right? Today?
Yes.
Isn't that it?
It has to be. What else would it be?
You grill them, char them, you could boil them. So, you have to wonder about what you're allowed to put on them. And this is Chicago. We hew to that idea.
I will tell this story to Bob, but my son Jake, I think, would Hot dog people would have a problem with him. We can discuss with Bob next.
How you handle a kid. That sounds like
it's a tough one.
A parenting book. All right. My friend Bob Schwartz, he wrote the book, Never Put Ketchup on a Hot Dog. He'll be here talking hot dogs on the hot dog holiday. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito in for Mully and Haw. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.